Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy!
Today's episode trigger warnings are pedophilia, sexual assault, non-consensual abortion, blood and knife play, torture, explicit sexual content.
Oh, boy.
All right. And we have a review.
Review.
And this one is from Crummy Girl. I don't know if that's how you say it, but I like to say it like that.
So crummy girl.
And it says, horny little rat. I stumbled upon this podcast and y'all are hilarious. I feel like I'm hanging out with my friends and cannot stop laughing. Please never change and keep this going. I even listened to an episode with my husband and you had him laughing so hard. 10 out of 5.
Yay.
Thank you, crummy.
And this week we read Sick Fucks by Tilly Cole. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I gave it a 4.5.
Whoa. Jenna, how am I not surprised? The most unhinged books. Jenna's like, eat it up.
You'll understand why at the end. This book, honestly, like, I feel like I went through like the 10 stages of grief or however many stages there are in grief. It made me, I cried like so much in this book, but it was like very healing. And I loved that.
The end was satisfying, I guess. We can discuss it when we get there.
Yeah.
Because it was, but also like the very end, I was like, oh, okay. You know? Shelby, what did you give it?
Tilly. I gave it a 2. I'm so sorry, girl, but I love dark romance, but I just had a baby. I cannot hang with this anymore.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah,
I get it.
I'm sure your other books are great.
I heard they are.
I heard nothing but great things about her, but this one was just not for me.
It is a rough read.
Rough.
What do you give it, Charlotte?
I gave it a 3.5.
Okay.
So we're all across the board on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it. The subject matter made my tummy hurt.
Yeah.
So I had to deduct a star, which isn't, that's only on me. But it's not a subject matter I enjoy.
I will say, I like, besides the subject matter part, the idea of what you're about to see, Riley.
Okay.
The storyline minus the yucky stuff.
Yeah. Please take the triggers seriously for this episode.
Yes.
It is extremely triggering, extremely dark, extremely graphic. We're not going to go into detail on some of the darker stuff, but please take the trigger warning seriously because this is a rough one.
Yeah. If you're very curious about the in-depth stuff, you got to read it yourself.
We couldn't even get it on Kindle or Amazon at all. We had to go through, like, what is it called?
Kobo.
Because it's completely banned at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
Everywhere.
Yeah, you can't really get it anywhere, so.
Oh, God.
The story begins with the prologue, and it's the first time that Alice meets Heathen James, and he was smiling as he was picking the wings off of a butterfly because he wanted to watch it die.
Oh, what a meet cute.
What, right?
Now, Heathen is everything in Alice's life. They were soulmates under Satan's watchful eyes. Just two sick fucks.
Yikes.
Alice is 7, and she's living at the Earnshaw Estate in Dallas, Texas. She's clutching her doll, staring at Heathen James, who's dressed in all black, even wearing a black vest. He's got black hair and light gray eyes. Her best friend, who's also a neighbor, is Eddie, and he said that Heathen's weird.
Heathen is weird.
She snuck out of her room last night and heard her dad say that Heathen's mom didn't want him anymore because he scared her, so she gave him to his dad, Mr. James, the groundskeeper. He didn't want him either, but he didn't have a choice because his mama ran away and left him all alone. Heathen's currently burning ants with a magnifying glass in the yard, but Ellis just shrugged and was like, I'm not sure why his mom's scared of him so much.
I'm scared of him.
Heathen is 9 years old, so he's just 2 years older than Ellis. Eddie remembered yesterday when Ellis met him that he was killing butterflies, and today he's killing ants, and he's thinking, why does he keep killing things? Ellis was like, meh, I'm gonna go talk to him.
Don't.
Yeah, she's completely unbothered by him.
So she walks up to Heathen, and he looks over his shoulder, and she sees a pile of dead ants and smoke. So he's like literally burning the pile of ants, and he tells her that they died a slow death, that they tried to escape, but he made them trapped, and they fought hard, but he had to kill them.
Mental health, sir. You need therapy.
It's about to get a lot worse for him, so.
Yeah. She crouched down to get a better look at the ants, and she could tell he was studying her, so she looked at him, smiled, and introduced herself, since yesterday she didn't get a chance to. She tells him that she lives here at the estate, and his eyes go to the doll in her hands, and she introduces Alice, her doll, who's dressed and looks exactly like her. He shakes his head and tells her no, and he's like, your name is not Alice, it's Dolly. He doesn't like the name Alice. It's stupid and it doesn't suit her. He decided that her name was Dolly yesterday. She was like, okay, like totally okay with it, even though he told her that her name was stupid. She just went along with it. And she tells him she wants to be just like Alice from Alice in Wonderland when she grows up. She asks if he's ever heard of the book, and he shakes his head, and he got hair in his eye, and she went to go push it out of the way, and his hand snapped up and grabbed her wrist. He didn't hurt her, but it made her sad and kind of scared, and he told her that no one touches him. She asked him why he was wearing a vest, but she called it a waistcoat, and he was like, it's called a vest. And she's like, my mom is from Oxford, England. And he asked where her mom was now, and she told him that she died last year, and before she died, she said that she would see her in Wonderland someday, and gave her her Alice doll, and told her that her Alice doll would keep her safe from bad people. She only sees her dad and her six uncles around, her nanny, Miss Jenkins, and his dad, Mr. James, and now him. He then ran his hands over the pocket in his vest, and she was like, what's in there? He was reluctant to show her at first, but when he finally did, he pulled out a pocket watch, except it was smashed and not moving. It was definitely broken. He looked at her confused and said, tick-tock, tick-tock, it works just fine. Can't you hear it? Tick-tock, can't you see it? She realized that Heathen was playing pretend, just like she did with her tea parties, so she was like, oh, I hear it, and smiled, and he froze, and he could have sworn she saw him smile too. A huge light bulb went off in her head, and she realized that he was the white rabbit with the pocket watch. Alice followed the rabbit down the rabbit hole, and he took her to Wonderland. He took her from her dull world into one full of bright colors and magical creatures, and now she thinks that he can show her a new world. Bestie neighbor Eddie comes up, and Heathen is not about it, and steps in front of Ellis, and he like kind of just like looks at him and scowls at him. Eddie tries inviting Ellis over, and even though he lives right next door, Ellis's dad has never ever let her leave the estate's ground her whole entire life. Heathen answers for her though. He says, no, she's staying here, go home. Ellis didn't let that get her down though. She swatted his hands away and told him silly rabbit and that he was being naughty and rude, but did tell Eddie that he knows that her dad won't let her leave. Eddie leaves, and Heathen tells Alice that he doesn't like Eddie. She tells him that Eddie's her friend, and he tells her that he doesn't have friends, and she says, well, now you do. So she kind of just like claimed him as hers. She shows him all of her favorite things and plays tea parties with him with her mother's favorite tea, Earl Grey. And Heathen has never played pretend before, so she asked him if he wanted instructions on how to properly drink tea, and placed her hand on his, which made him freeze and made her jump, and she forgot that he didn't want anyone touching him. She told him that he had the prettiest eyes ever and that he smelled good, and he leaned in and was like smelling her and told her that she smelled good too, like roses. She wears her mom's perfume. She puts a little dab behind her ear every single day. She's not supposed to wear it, but she does it to like remember her mom. Ellis gave him a little crash course on the tea party and tells him that every time he drinks tea, he must put his pinky up. He tells her that the tea is perfect, not too hot, not too cold, and it makes her so happy. She shows him her most prized possession, which is her mom's boombox that has a cassette tape of her mom's favorite songs, and it's all from the 80s. They're her most favorite songs in the whole wide world, and she plays them every single day. She plays Dear Jesse by Madonna for Heathen, which is her mom's favorite song, and she jumps up and starts dancing and singing. She says that she always danced for her papa and her uncles almost every single night, and she loves to dance. They always ask her to dance in her Alice in Wonderland dress, and she loved dancing for them because it made them smile. After her performance, he told her that he liked it a lot, and they finished their tea. She pulled out her final treasure Dr. Jochethan, and it was her Alice's Adventures in Wonderland book, and she asked him if he could read it to her since she can't read. She's homeschooled, but her dad doesn't really have time to school her, so she just spends all day playing in the yard. It's 2 years later, and Heathen's dad, Mr. James, it's his funeral. He doesn't feel anything, just completely detached. Ellis, who he calls Dolly, comes up and grabs his hand. He knows it's her without even looking because she's the only person who will ever touch him, the only person who ever even speaks to him, and it's just the way that he likes it. He told Dolly that in order to be his friend, she would have to cut Eddie out of her life because he doesn't share, so she chose him in a heartbeat. Eddie doesn't come around anymore. It's just them, the estate staff, Mr. Earnshaw, who's Ellis's dad, her uncles, his business partners, who all live all the way out in the countryside in Dallas. Heathen was homeschooled just like Dolly, but since there's no actual school, he's been the one that's trying to teach her to read and write.
So they're like homeschooled, but not really?
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah. And she's never left the estate before, and she doesn't know how to read or write.
Poor little baby.
She just dances for her uncles, and that's it.
Ugh. Being around anyone except Dolly made him want to get extremely violent, like shoot people in the head most nights. He would fall asleep to thoughts of what they would all look like dead. He's had these thoughts since as long as he could remember. So he's 11 at this point. Dolly always wears her little Alice in Wonderland blue dress with a white apron and white socks. But not today. She's wearing a black dress. He tells her that he fucking hates her in black because she belongs in color. He lives in shade and she lives in the light, and she needs to change. When she asked if he's sad about his dad, he's like, no. And she's like totally taken back because like a 9-year-old girl with a bunch of emotions, she's like, what do you mean? You don't miss your mom? And he's like, no, I don't feel anything at all. He tells her that no one means anything to him, and she starts tearing up, and she asks him if he meant her too, and he felt something rip in his chest, and this is like the first emotion that he's felt all day long. He wipes her tears away, not knowing why his stomach and chest feel so weird. If he never saw her again, it wouldn't be like with his parents. He feels everything with Dolly. He told her that she means something, and he doesn't give a single fuck about anyone else, only her. And now that his dad has passed away, he's going to be living with them. Miss Jenkins, who's Alice's nanny, comes into her room and tells Heathen that Mr. Earnshaw wanted to see him, and narrowed her eyes at them sitting so close together on her bed, and scolded Ellis for not wearing her morning clothes. And Heathen told her that he told Ellis to change, and he always wants her in color, never in black. And her face paled at the way he said it. Still, the interaction made Ellis probably feel like she was in trouble, and she was looking at the ground, and Heathen did not like the way that Miss Jenkins talked to her. He took Dolly's chin and lifted it up and told her that he'll read to her when he gets back. Miss Jenkins and Heathen make their way to Mr. Earnshaw's office, and as they're walking down the hallway, Heathen tells Miss Jenkins that there's no kids at the estate today. Meanwhile, in his head, he's thinking of all the ways to make her bleed, what color her blood is, how quickly she would bleed if he took a knife to her throat. The color drains from her face, and she's like, what do you mean? And he tells her that he's seen kids him and Dolly's age walking this hallway at night, brought from the front door in a blacked out van in the dead of night by her and Dolly's uncle, straight through this hallway into Mr. Earnshaw's office. She's basically gaslighting him, and she's like, you're crazy. You have such a wild imagination. But he knows that she's lying. He knows what he saw. Miss Jenkins ushers Heathen into Mr. Earnshaw's office and then shuts the door behind him, leaving him in the room with him, Mr. Earnshaw, and Ellis's six uncles. Mr. Earnshaw says what happened to Heathen's father was such a freak accident, a tragedy, and he asks how he's doing. He runs a finger down his cheek, and Heathen's like, I don't want this man fucking touching me. Mr. E tells him that his new room is going to be on this floor, not far from this office, and when Heathen tries saying that he wants to be next to Dolly, Mr. E hands him a glass of liquor and tells him whiskey always makes everything better. He's literally 11. He tells Heathen that Ellis is only 9, almost 10, and soon she'll be able to do more with herself and others. He's almost 12 and already a young man, and he wants to safeguard him. Mr. E brings Heathen over to sit with the six uncles, and they cheers to Derek James, Heathen's father. Heathen doesn't want to drink the whiskey, but Mr. E tips the glass at his lips until he's drinking it down until it's empty. Then the room starts spinning, and he must have fallen asleep. When he next opened his eyes, Miss Jenkins was leading him to his new bedroom, 2 doors away from Mr. E's office. He never made it back to Dolly's room to read to her. For the next week, the same thing happened. He met with Mr. E and the uncles. They made him drink the whiskey, telling him that he needed to relax, and then he couldn't see straight. Then, not at all. The next day, he felt weak, weird parts of him ached, and he couldn't focus. He wanted to fight it, this happening day after day, but he had no energy to do so.
It's exactly what you think.
Yeah.
The book really spells it out for you, too.
I was gonna ask, does the book, like...
Yeah.
It's very graphic. Oh. I mean, she definitely could have been more graphic, but she was plenty graphic.
Yeah. This time, when he gets into the office, things were different. When he was called into the room with Mr. E and the uncles, they tell Heathen that when his dad died, he owed them money. Since he is now Heathen's legal guardian, that also costs money. So how is he going to earn his keep? Uncle Clive, the biggest and most disgusting, rose from his chair and told him that he had an idea about how he can start his repayments. And Mr. E ordered him to go with Clive. He leads Heathen to Heathen's new bedroom. And things that I'm going to be telling my therapist about happen. Pedophile, child, innocence taken.
Oh my god.
It's horrible.
It's disgusting.
It's horrible.
Oh my god.
I will literally cry thinking about it. I can't even think about it. During such a traumatic moment in his life, he disassociated, like his life depended on it. He had his little pocket watch in his hand and he was whispering to himself, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, until he heard the door shut behind him. He tried pulling himself together, but everything hurt and felt wrong, and there was only one place he wanted to go. He made sure the coast was clear and he ran straight for Dolly's room. Dolly goes to his side and sees that he's sad and asks him what's wrong and tries to dance for him, knowing that that always makes him happy. And he immediately remembered her saying that her dad and uncles love it when she dances for them, and he yells at her to stop dancing and to turn off the fucking music. He asks her to promise him no more dancing for her dad and uncles, and she asks if she can still dance for him, and it made his chest feel weird again, the only ever time he feels anything. And he says okay, only for him. He tells her he wants to protect her from bad people, and she looked down at her Alice doll and nodded like she understood. Dolly always understood him. When Dolly asked if he was sad, he automatically went to go say no, because usually he doesn't feel anything. But when he opened his mouth, he told Dolly yes, and she hugged him, and he let her hold him longer than usual, and he wanted her touch to erase theirs. She wished that they could escape to Wonderland with her rabbit right now. They just needed to find a rabbit hole in the house, a way to escape. His mind goes to all the girls and boys he's seen brought in the house at night, and as if Dolly knew his mind was just like not present, she distracted his thoughts by giving him a little smooch. At this moment, he knew that it was always him and Dolly, and he promised himself they would never touch her. He would let them have as much of him as they wanted if it meant keeping her safe, pure, and innocent. If anyone ever tried to take her from him, he would kill them all, and he would enjoy it. It's 6 months later, and Ellis turns 10 in 1 hour. She has a brand new dress, one for older girls, along with black and white striped knee-high socks that her dad bought her last year. He saw them after getting them in the mail, and he said they were too old for her, but she could wear them on her 10th birthday because it would be a special day for her.
Oh no.
I don't really want to go into super detail about the dress, but it's kind of like an Alice in Wonderland dress that she was wearing as a child, but sexualized.
Yeah, so like the college girls that dress in Alice in Wonderland, it's like what that, but she's 10. So it's like mid-thigh with thigh-high socks.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and her dad was like, you're 10, wear it.
Special day.
She was so excited, and it just literally broke my heart about I in my head knew what was gonna fucking happen, and I was literally crying. I was
It's her dad.
Yeah, it was so fucking sad. Miss Jenkins, her nanny, she hands her a cup of Earl Grey tea and tells her that there's a present from her dad. It's a pair of ankle boot heels with 4 gold buckles, and it has a little heel on it.
For a 10-year-old.
But yeah. Before putting the shoes on her feet, Miss Jenkins told her that she must drink all of the tea.
Fuck Miss Jenkins.
Don't worry, the middle to end of the book will be very therapeutic.
Yes.
Good.
She played in her mom's heels all the time. She knew she could walk in heels, but the second that she started standing up, she couldn't walk very well and everything started to go blurry. Miss Jenkins said it's midnight. She's officially 10 years old and wished her happy birthday and tucked her towards the door, down the elevator to her dad's office. She couldn't talk. She could hardly walk. She wanted her rabbit. He could always make her feel better. She hadn't seen Rabbit much anymore, though. He would still sneak into her room whenever he could, but he would always act strange. He would rock back and forth, looking at his watch saying, tick tock, tick tock, and he would cuddle her and squeeze her so tight sometimes she couldn't breathe. He never used to hold her. The elevator door opened and she saw Uncle Clive leading Heathen into a room and shut the door. She wanted to call out for him, saying that she needed help, but she couldn't even make her lips move because they were numb. As they get into her father's office, everyone hugs and kisses her and wishing her a happy birthday, and she wanted to scream and cry for help, but she still couldn't. Her dad put on Dear Jessie and they asked her to dance for him and her uncles, and she shook her head no. He then made her promise every night he saw her not to dance for them. Her father did not like that she wasn't obeying, though, and Uncle John said that he won the poker game fair and square and that he won the right for tonight, so he goes first. Oh. She looked back at her dad, who was talking to the other uncles, just shaking hands and laughing. As Uncle John was pulling her towards a room, her Alice doll fell out of her hands, and her protector, who her mom said that Alice doll would always protect her, was just laying on the floor as she was being dragged into a room. I will also be telling my therapist about this part of the book. I said it before, and unfortunately, I have to say it again. Fucking different pedophile, child, innocence taken.
Everyone's face is just like a perpetual frown right now.
I know. It's all sad.
It's horrible.
I feel bad I'm not giving like any commentary, but I'm like, I have no words.
She was in shock as she was walking back to her dad's office. It hurt so bad to walk, she was limping. As she gets back into the office, she hears no from Heathen. He's getting thin and he has big dark circles under his eyes, like little panda eyes, you know, like from like abuse. So he's in the office with them now, and he saw Alice walk back in. He fought off Uncle Sam's grip on him and gets to her side and holds her and steps back, looking at her shaking, taking in her appearance. When she looked down, all she saw was red, and Heathen is shaking with fury. Uncle Lester says he wants them both at the same time, and Heathen said, absolutely fucking not. He will risk himself, but touch her, and he will kill them all. Everyone starts laughing because it's a 12-year-old child that said that, and Uncle Eric, one of the uncles, he rushed towards Heathen to get him out of the way of Ellis, and Heathen ran his hand along the desk and grabbed something, and then as Eric grabbed Heathen's hair to pull him away from Dolly, Heathen stabbed Eric all over.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Vengeance, baby.
Stab all that man. Pedophiles.
Stab.
Her papa, Uncle Lester, and Uncle John beat the shit out of Rabbit, and it literally breaks my heart because it's an innocent little boy.
Oh, I hate this.
Just wait. You'll feel better soon. It's only up from here.
It gets a little bit wavy, but it's only up.
That's like a steady, wavy incline.
There we go. Okay.
Mr. Eag is off the phone with someone and tells Ellis to say goodbye to Heathen because he's going to a place where he cannot come back from. Heathen shed a single tear, and Ellis swore her heart broke then and there because Rabbit doesn't cry, not for anyone, except her, because he realized he was being taken away from her. She ran up to him to give him a hug, and as they heard a car come up the driveway, he tells her he's coming back for her, and he will take her to Wonderland. He tells her to reach into his vest pocket to grab his pocket watch, and as she's being pulled away by Miss Jenkins, she tells Heathen that she loves him and that he's her best friend. She watched from her bedroom window as the van took Heathen away and never returned. She looked at the pocket watch in her bloody hands from the broken glass and gasped when she noticed the clock hands that were always broken are now moving. She was seeing what Rabbit always saw. She put the watch to her ear just like he did and whispered, tick-tock. She would count until her rabbit came home. It's 11 years later, and Heathen arrives back at the estate walking with a black cane with a white rabbit's head. Out of instinct, his hand ran over to the empty pocket in his vest, searching for his pocket watch. As if willing him towards it like a siren's call, he goes towards the mansion. He knew those who polluted this house were no longer here, but she was, and he was finally here to get her back.
Go get your Dolly.
Get her!
Oh, he'll get her.
He's getting flashbacks of his last day here, the day he was taken from her. He was shouting for her long after being in the van, sacrificing himself night after night, man after man, with no breaks, just so she didn't get touched for her to be covered in blood. Reliving his first kill, they drove so long it was a full day. They took him to a tall water tower in the middle of nowhere. At the bottom of the water tower was a door that goes below, and there's rows and rows of cell. A secret Alcatraz funded by the filthy rich, said the old man who runs the towers.
I'm convinced this place is real.
Yeah, I hate to think that people like this actually exist and things like this actually happen. You know that it's happening, like, yes, right now.
For sure.
And that makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking disgusting.
My thing is, like, if you're growing up, if you're, like, feeling like little kids are attractive to you, kill yourself.
Dead.
Do it.
Kill yourself.
Honestly. Do it.
Right then and there.
Yeah.
Death to all pedos.
Agreed.
I stand by my statement. Kill yourself.
Do it. Only if you're a pedo.
Yeah, only if you're a pedophile. If you're not, people love you. Don't kill yourself.
Stay another day.
But if you like children, kick rocks.
Dead.
The warden says that the only cell open is 52, and they're unsure if it's smart adding another person in that cell, and they don't want to make it any more dangerous than they already are. But he's like, he's just a kid. What harm can he do? They lead him past cell after cell, men after men, some licking at the bars, some threatening to kill him. He feels no fear. He will kill anyone that comes near him. Sick fuck after sick fuck after sick fuck.
Hey, that's the book.
Weird. He gets pushed into his new cell and are met by his new cellmates. There's Chapel, who's in his mid-20s with blonde hair, and he was a lawyer, but he says he's a ripper of sorts. He likes women of the night and likes to cut them open in the most delicious ways.
Jack?
Yeah.
Was that you? Jack the Rippy?
Jackie Rippy? He's been here for 2 years now, and the other man is Henry, and he's a psychologist. Chapel says that Henry's innocent, but as he said that, Henry's eyes close and his shoulders roll forward and his posture change, and it's just like the man changed as he said that. Chapel reintroduced that man as Hyde. Hyde is not innocent. He likes to watch people die under his hand. He even says that he likes to watch people too, not as much as he likes to kill them himself, and he gets the stamp of approval by his new roomies.
So he's just a child in a prison cell.
Yeah, and like this weird underground prison that no one knows about with a Jekyll and Hyde motherfucker and Jack the Ripper.
They ask for his name and he says his name is Rabbit. And he's like, I gotta get out of here though. I got a girl I gotta get back to. And they tell him they plan to get out of here one day, but they have to wait. They have to plan and scheme. It's 3 months before he gets back to the estate and they got out by the new guard. The guards, all of them, they knew to stay away from the cell due to how dangerous they were. But the newbie, they saw an opportunity and they took it. During his time in the dungeon, Chapel gave Heathen a tattoo, many tattoos, with a needle from when he almost died from an infection. The tattoo is on his back and it's a portrait of Dolly.
He's like, I almost died from an infection and they poked me with this needle. You want a tattoo?
Mm-hmm.
You want a portrait of your boo on the outside?
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He was able to draw the portrait of Dolly with the paper and ink that the new guards smuggled into their cells for them, thanks to Chapel's flirting and teasing. Rabbit also drew a deck of cards. Henry, who's the psychologist, prepped him for the state that he might find Dolly in, and Hyde taught him how to kill, and Chapel taught him arts, math, and literature.
Wow.
There's a couple teachers.
A well-rounded education.
Honestly. Put these men in a private school. Let them teach the children.
Yeah.
Educated.
I'm going to murder 101. It's my first period.
It's my first period.
Love that class.
The night they escaped, Heathen was woken up by Chapel and Hyde, pinning the new guard to the bars. Hyde stabs him in the throat with a tattoo needle while Chapel covers his mouth, and they urge Heathen to take his blade and kill him. He makes his first kill since that night 11 years ago, and he wants more. They take the keys and the gun from the guard and they open their cell door. They kill every single guard, giving all the keys they captured and threw into the other cells, and finally Chapel took the last key and opened it. They get fresh air for the first time in 11 years, and the first place they go to is the warden's house. Hyde kills them instantly, Chapel gets a car, Hyde and Heathen get cash from the house, and then they're on the road to one of Chapel's secret houses.
Hell yeah.
The next few months, he planned his return to Dolly, prepping for her. He was coming back for his girl and ready to lead her down the rabbit hole. The flashback is over, he's walking up to the house and breathing through the crippling PTSD the house brings him. He gets inside and everything was the same except for it was covered in white sheets, as if it was like trying to hide the horrors that happened in the house. He hears the noise upstairs and that made him focus, and he starts making his way up to Dolly's room. When he gets there, it's completely void of life. No music, no smell of roses, no tea, nothing. And he feels like he can't breathe. He turns to the corner and he finds her sitting in a chair and he sucks in a breath. Her hair was pulled back into a long braid and she was dressed in a long black dress with baggy sleeves covering her arms. Dolly does not belong in black, only in color.
That's right.
She's completely skin and bones and lifeless, looking out the window where they used to play as kids. He got in her line of sight and she just stared out blankly, eyes not following him as if he's not there at all. He tries to move a piece of hair that's in her face and he couldn't because he hasn't touched or been touched in 11 years. He's not even sure if he can do it. He tries to speak to her, but as he does, there's a loud gasp in the air and it's Miss Jenkins.
Ew, fuck her.
Fuck her. She says, Heathen James, it's not possible. And he's like, I am Rabbit. Motherfucking White Rabbit. Never utter that peasant named to me again. He brought a box with him and dropped it at Miss Jenkins' feet and ordered her to dress Dolly. When Miss Jenkins pulled out the outfit, it's the same outfit that she wore on her 10th birthday.
Oh.
Yeah. Henry gave Heathen advice before he came back about Dolly, and he's realizing that his biggest fear might be coming true, that due to such severe abuse and trauma, she might not be the person he once knew due to repression. Dolly may lock herself in a metaphorical mental door, no talking, no real living, so he needs to lure her back to him with familiar but safe things. So he makes Miss Jenkins put Ellis's lipstick on her rose perfume, he gets down her boombox and plays her favorite music, and he saw Dolly's fingers twitch, and he knew that she was still in there.
I don't know about the outfit, though.
That was a choice.
Yeah.
Bold.
Very bold.
At least it's age appropriate now, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
And she will love it. She will come to love the dress.
Okay.
He's like looking her over and his gaze lock on her forearms in rage like he's never known consumed him. And it's scars upon scars upon scars covering her arms. Miss Jenkins tries pleading for her life.
Oh, did you actually entertain the thought that you would be allowed to live? I shook my head slowly in disappointment. None of you will, Mrs. Jenkins. Every one of you will pay in the most painful way possible. To me and to my Dolly, my wonderful darling, and there will be your blood and all the others' blood pouring in rivers of penance, slipping through the cracks in the house's wooden floors all over my Lone Star State. I moved forward, my face just an inch from her. I can just smell it now, taste it, savoring its warmth as it licks at my tongue. I bit my bottom lip and moaned. My cock gets hard just thinking of it.
Kill that woman.
So he slices her throat and he watches the light go out from her eyes. Then he takes one of the cards that he made in his dungeon cell, a queen of hearts, and he drops it right on her body. And he says, one down, six to go.
Yeah.
He goes back to Dolly and he tells her he's come back for her and that he's found a rabbit hole. And he's just trying to lure her back basically to reality and that he's here to take her to Wonderland. Dolly's head twitched and her eyes moved from the window to his. There's no real signs of life yet, but there was movement and that's a start. He ran to his car. He grabbed a saw rope from the trunk and cut a hole in the floorboard from upstairs and then went back into Miss Jenkins' room, stole her cash that she was hoarding from getting paid from the abusers. And he gets back to Dolly, packs all of her favorite things and puts them in his car. He picks Dolly up and ties the rope around her waist and puts her by the hole in the floorboard. He noticed her hand was clenched and it was clenched this entire time. And when he opened her fingers a little bit, he couldn't breathe when he saw what she was holding. It was his watch. Tick tock, he said, and Dolly's breathing changed from quiet to fast. And she looked at him again and he put the watch to his ears and told Dolly that they're going to be late and she needed to follow him down the rabbit hole. He ran down the stairs and looked up at the hole and saw Dolly standing there frozen until she looked down. Then he quickly pulled on the rope and she fell down like the man-made hole that he made. So he like basically like made her fall down the rabbit hole that he made.
Cute.
Having someone touch him was like still physically immensely painful, but this is Dolly and he had to remind himself that she is his whole world. She started moving and then blinked three times and looked around the room as if coming to after many years. She said Rabbit's name, but in a complete English accent, not a Texas one. She smiled, but as quick as it appeared, it was gone. She told him that she was trapped for so long, so many doors, and she couldn't get out, and she was waiting for him, and she tried to stay strong for him. She looked around the room and stiffened and realized that they're still in the house, and she was starting to slip into a panic attack, so she was like realizing that they hadn't gotten out yet, and he didn't want her to go back into that repressed state. Rabbit knew she was comparing this to her favorite book, Alice in Wonderland, and he pulled out a vial with a black bow that's on a necklace from his vest pocket, identical from the one that's in her favorite book that says, drink me. It was literally like sugar water with blue dye, but he told her that if she drinks it, she'll shrink so she can follow him through the door and out into Wonderland. She drinks it and she tells him that she's shrinking and she starts laughing and smiling and it's the most amazing sight and sound he's ever witnessed. She takes her first step outside in God knows how long and makes her way into the passenger seat of Rabbit's Mustang. She tells Rabbit that she's ready for whatever Wonderland has in store for them as they drive away from the house that has haunted them both. Nothing could be more beautiful than him and his Dolly getting their revenge.
We are in Dolly's POV and she can't believe how bright Wonderland is, but her focus keeps going back to Rabbit. He's bigger and she notices that he has many tattoos on his arms. They're clocks and watches of all different shapes and sizes and they crawl all the way up to his neck. She voices how she's nervous about Wonderland and then starts to cry because she feels bad that she's leaving her friend behind, and he's immediately like, are you talking about Eddie Smith? And she's like, who's Eddie? My friend's name is Ellis.
What?
Yeah. Because she's like in her brain, she's two different people right now.
Oh.
She's Dolly and Ellis.
He freezes and she says that Ellis was trapped behind a door but would sometimes talk to her. She mentioned that men would hurt her and she was very sad and lonely, and then one day she quit coming to the door. He tells her that he thinks Ellis will be okay with time, but they need to keep going. And then she drops a mind-blowing bomb and says that Ellis had a friend, like she has Rabbit. His name was Heathen, and he got taken away from her. Like, he's two different people to her, too. They pull off on a dirt road and arrive at a house, and once they're inside, he tells her that they're gonna have tea. It's her favorite, Earl Grey, so they drink their tea, and he lays his playing cards on the table. He tells her that he was sent to her because Wonderland is in trouble, and her friend Ellis is actually lost there. He explains that Heathen contacted him and told him to rescue Dolly so they can help Ellis. He shows her the playing cards and explains that there's only 5 people left because one has already been fulfilled. Ellis needs a brave champion to free her, and her rabbit's gonna help her do that. He'll even teach her along the way for the journey. On the cards, one is the caterpillar, one's the Cheshire Cat, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, the Jabberwocky, and finally the King of Hearts. And she agrees. He leads her out of the house to a building in the back to train for the mission. In the building, he takes her to another door and down a staircase where it's cold and there are dead pigs hanging from the ceiling.
They're already dead. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. They're dead. He tells her that they are the closest to human flesh, so that's where they're going to begin training. He hands her a personalized blade and gun, and they get to work. And she is loving the shit out of stabbing these dead pigs.
She is. Oh my god. She just like, stab, stab, stab.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's hard as a rock.
Rabbit's fingers tightened around the cane's head. He shifted on his feet, bringing the cane closer to his body, like he was hiding something. A bony? He had a bony. As she's stabbing pigs, he's like, oh god. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He tells her that they will practice more, but it's time to clean up and get ready for bed. She gets him to the bath, he draws for her, and she starts thinking about him.
My thighs begin to clench, and a deep pressure built so greatly between my legs that I slipped my hand in between them and over my private parts just to try and find some relief. I gasped as a burst of heat shot up my spine. My fingers worked faster between my thighs, and my back arched as the pressure there grew.
Wait, and they're like together, right? Still?
No.
No, she's in the bath by herself. She touches herself until she orgasms and quickly cleans up. When she leaves the bathroom, she sees Rabbit with no shirt on, covered in tattoos, wearing pajama pants, and she's horny all over again.
Oh my god, these guys. A large bulge lay underneath, obvious under the thin material. Another boner.
He turns around and she gasps as she sees the tattoo that covers his back. It's her portrait. He turns around and tells her that she is all he thought about in the place that he was kept, and then they just stare at each other. She wants to touch him, and when she looks down, she notices that bulge got bigger.
Oh, but of course.
He leaves the room and returns with the box. It's filled with all her favorite things from her house. Her mom's CDs, the pink boombox, perfume, lipstick, and her book, and along with the Alice doll. But the Alice doll is described now, 11 years later, as just a head cracked with a few strands of hair. And it reminds me of a creepy Cynthia doll.
Yeah. I think it's like a porcelain doll, too.
It is.
Yeah, it's porcelain.
Oh, that's even more terrifying.
I've pictured like the eyes, like the ones that like open, you know, when you like tilt the head a certain way.
It's the like the little strands of hair that gets me. And she like carries it by like the strands of hair too. That's like what's funny.
She plays her boombox and dances for him for a bit until he tells her it's time to go to bed. Where 1 week later, Rabbit's POV, they're on their way to the caterpillar's house, and all he can think about is the disgusting man abusing him 11 years ago, and he knows that Dolly's ready for this.
I'd never been so turned on as watching her fight. I wasn't sure how I'd contain myself watching her make real kills, especially this pedophilic fucker and any other cunts he had protecting him. Yeah, get him.
Yeah,
kill him.
Get him.
Kill that man.
They see the house in the distance and pull off on the side of the road. We learn that all the uncles and Mr. Earnshaw fled when one of the kids they were abusing started to talk. A hired cop covered it up as best as he could, but they still took precaution by leaving the estate. But I guess they still never stopped being pieces of shit. Rabbit kicks the front door down and they take out all of his guards, but she wants more blood and takes off running. They kill the last guard and he tells her that he'll secure Caterpillar and then he's all hers. She moans at this and licks the blood off her fingers. The caterpillar tries to shoot him but misses when they break into the office. He sees who it is and says this is not possible. Once Rabbit ties him down, she slices his cheek and he says the name Ellis, and she tells him to never say that name again. The caterpillar says that she's insane and always has been. So she steps it up a notch with the insanity. She turns on the record player, dances around the room, and stabs him over and over and over again until he is dead.
She
just keeps dancing.
I love it.
Good.
She writes on the wall with her pink lipstick, sick fucks, but she spells it F-U-X. She asks if it's spelled right, but Rabbit doesn't have the heart to correct her since she's had no schooling and he barely got to teach her how to read and write.
That's so sad.
Leaves the caterpillar's playing card on his body and they leave. They're back at the house and he watches her play with makeup because obviously since she ruined her lipstick, he had to go get her more. And he's very turned on by this because she literally does her makeup like a creepy doll. She does like the twiggy bottom lashes.
A look.
It is.
He loves it.
He wants to touch her, but it's an internal war since he hates to be touched. He tries to cover himself, but she sits on the side of the bed against the footboard.
Her legs were open and her hand was underneath her dress. Dolly, I stroked along the length of my dick over my pants. I want to touch you, Rabbit, she said as the heel of her boot scraped at the comforter. I want to feel your hand do this to me. I want you to make me feel the shivers that break out inside of me when I simply think of your face. I want to feel you above me. A whimper fell from her lips. Little Dolly wants her rabbit.
And she's British, too.
Little Dolly wants her rabbit.
Yeah.
She starts to undress and he watches.
I swallowed, still looking at her face, until I had no other choice but to look down. A groan clawed from my chest at the sight of her exposed pussy, the blonde hair enticing me in. Blonde pussy hair?
Yeah, she's blonde.
I know, but I always thought pussy hair was...
darker, right?
Yeah.
No, I think if you're blonde, you can have blonde pubes.
Yeah, she blonde. Like if you're a towhead.
Does the carpet match the drapes? You know?
Is towhead an insult?
No, I don't think so.
Why would you call them a towhead? Maybe it's because they look like a big toe because their hair blends in with their head.
Maybe that is derogatory. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it is.
I don't know. We can look it up. And if it is, Charlotte, cut it out.
Sorry to all the towheads out there.
If you're a towhead, this one's for you.
Yeah.
He rips his pants open and grabs himself to start jerking off as he watches her. I hated this part. She continues to touch herself when parts of Ellis's past come into Wonderland. So now it's like the two personalities are like mixed together. So as she's touching herself, she's whispering all the gross things that her abuser said to her as Ellis. And then he gets mad about it, but he does the same thing. He says every gross thing that the same abusers did to him while he touches himself.
They're like reclaiming it, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to like reclaim it and like, I guess.
Does it say what they would say to him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's yucky. It's really gross.
Okay.
They continue until they both finish and he actually finishes all over her. They stare at each other with tears running down their cheeks and he fights the nausea and just touches her face because he knows that they both need it. She bathes again and they get into bed and she asks if he could hold her to sleep like he did when they were kids and he agrees. We are in a new POV. We are in Eddie's POV.
Eddie.
He became a Texas Ranger, which was like his lifelong goal as a little kid. He's at the Earnshaw Estate looking for Ellis. He recognizes the smell of a dead body and races for the stairs. Once he reaches her bedroom, he sees that her chair is gone and her dark clothes are in a heap on the floor. And then he sees feet peeking out from near the bathroom and his heart stops. But it's not her. He recognizes Mrs. Jenkins. He continues to look for her in the house and realizes someone might have kidnapped her. And he calls his uncle to tell him that she's been kidnapped. And his uncle is like the lead Texas Ranger, I guess. His uncle arrives and he tells him how all the men left the estate years ago for no reason. He came and visited Ellis every week after her breakdown she had in her teens. And his uncle asks if maybe she killed Mrs. Jenkins. And he's like, there's no way. She was practically a zombie. And even before that, she's always been very fragile, soft, and sweet. His uncle's phone rings and he tells Eddie there's also been a murder in Amarillo. They arrive to absolute carnage. He asks who the gentleman was and they get the name Lester Knowles. And it's familiar to Eddie, but he's not sure how until it hits him. Mr. Earnshaw's associate. But Ellis called them her uncle since they practically helped raise her.
Yeah.
Ew.
He wonders aloud if they're all linked, and his uncle says, perhaps we should contact the rest of them immediately.
No.
And then he makes like a mental note that he's going to save Ellis wherever she is.
Do they know that they're all pedophiles?
No.
No.
Not at all?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
No one had any idea. It was like an elite, rich, 1% kiddie sex ring.
Yeah.
So no one knew. They had enough money to like cover it up, and none of the like authorities ever caught on because they were so rich.
We go back to Dolly's POV. They traveled to a new place and Rabbit's acting super weird. He hasn't touched her since that night. She tries to make him look at her, and when he finally does, she can see his pants are getting tight on himself because she is in her full doll makeup, ready to go. She thinks of what he does at night when she pretends to be asleep and her thighs clench.
"You're vain," he would whisper to me when he thought I was asleep. "You're vain, so thick, so full." His sharp thimble, like a feather, touching my pulse. Warm breath would fan my skin, shooting shivers down my spine. Then came the tip of his tongue, its wet tip tracing the vein so completely, never straying from its path. Rabbit groaning low in his throat as he touched his shaft between his legs, as he stroked his hand back and forth, faster and faster, lapping at my throat until he stilled and choked on his breath.
Rabbit.
They're both really into blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they had some fucked up lives. I feel like nothing about their lives moving forward would be, like, ordinary.
No. And it won't be.
No. She would chance a peek at him while she's sleeping or pretending to be asleep and see him slice a small spot on his wrist and then rub his blood on his lips and tongue, and she wanted that to be her blood.
She's a goober. Towards the end of the book, she's a goofy goober.
"Is somebody gonna match my freak?"
That's her, honestly. Yeah. Honestly.
As they drive, she practices what she's gonna say to the Cheshire Cat, but he pulls the car off the side of the road and slams on the brakes, yelling at her that the Cheshire Cat is his to kill. He's got a score to settle. They hit a dirt road again and park. The house is in view beyond some trees, and they see a man come out the front door and enter the barn. When they get to the barn, it's empty. They walk in silence to the middle when they see a trap door. They go down the ladder and walk through a hallway, and they pause when they recognize a familiar sound. They burst through the room, and the Cheshire Cat is being his sick and depraved self while assaulting a little boy with a small blonde girl in a cage next to the bed.
Oh my god.
Rabbit attacks him while Dolly frees the kids and tells them to run. The Cheshire Cat can't believe Ellis is there, and she doesn't understand why everyone keeps calling her that. That's not her name.
"My name is Dolly."
"My name is Dolly, you fucking idiot."
I loved when she was like practicing though. She's like, "It's time for tea. It's time for tea. It's time for tea." She's like, "Which one sounds best?"
She's like, "How am I gonna say it?"
Rabbit sets his cane down and takes off his jacket. He tells Dolly to take the Cheshire Cat's pants off. She does, and she steps back. Rabbit starts circling him and whispers the words that he used to say to him while he was being violated. He then grabs his blade and slices his wiener off.
Damn. Yeah.
I love that part. Slice it.
The Cheshire Cat screams, but Rabbit isn't done. He grabs a spade from the back of the room and breaks the handle in two, throwing the metal side off to the side. Dolly is very turned on at watching this. He takes the broken handle and stabs the Cheshire Cat in the torso and breaks his arm clean in half. He then grabs a paintbrush. I don't remember where he gets said paintbrush from, but he dips it in the blood and draws Roman numerals around him. The Cheshire Cat is very dead, and when Rabbit steps away, Dolly sees him drenched in blood. Then he starts losing his shit because he keeps screaming that he does not want to be covered in this blood.
And which one is the Cheshire Cat?
Uncle Clyde, the one that originally raped him the most.
Okay.
She rushes to him and holds his head in her hands and kisses him. He freezes for a moment, but then his mouth starts to move on hers. She grabs his face again and tells them that she is his. This is her smell on him, her breath on him, and then she undoes his pants.
I reached forward, gripped his shaft in my hand, and placed my mouth at his ear. "My cock," I said. Rabbit smacked his fist against the wall above me and burrowed his face into my neck. "Rub my scent all over you." He thrust against my hand, his cock swollen and hard. "Take my breath. Take my touch." I bite my lip and said, "Take my pussy."
Take it.
Take it. Take it. Take it. take me pissy.
He reaches under her skirt to find her hella soaked. He pulls her panties off and touches her, and she says that he's actually touching her, and then he freezes.
Rabbit reared back his head, and his eyes clashed with mine. He froze. I froze. Kitty's blood was smeared across his face. When his eyes flared, I knew that the blood was now on my face, too. Then he was on me. He reached forward and split apart the laces of my corset.
Oh my goodness.
He lifts her off the floor and she wraps her legs around his waist. As he's about to enter her, she hears a memory Ellis used to tell her about and how the men did things to her, but she tells Ellis to go away. So she's like, go away, Ellis, as he's like literally about to fuck her. He starts to thrust into her and they both have to verbally remind themselves it's them and not the bad men. They both finish, and when they come down, he holds her and they just touch each other until it's time to leave. He leaves his playing card and she writes sick fucks on his forehead. She's watching the news. The cops have connected the two murders together and refer to the killer or killers as sick fucks. They also say they think the murder of an old woman in Dallas and a kidnapping of a young woman from Dallas might also be connected. Rabbit was the one to actually call the police after the Cheshire Cat because he wanted them to know that those two pieces of shit were dead. He turns the TV off and tells her to go shower off the blood. They're still both covered in blood. When she gets out of the bathroom, she sees that he has used her knife to make cuts all over his chest, and then he breaks a pin in half and rubs it over the cuts, and she's like, why are you doing that? And when he wipes it clean, sick fucks is now tattooed on his chest.
Oh.
She runs her hands through the blood on his chest and watches as his bulge grows under his sleep pants. She licks the blood off her hands and he groans. He says her pulse is begging for him to taste it as she has from him, and she tells him yes, so he squeezes her throat.
When I apply pressure like this, your veins bulge. They beg to be opened. He tightened his grip. Your blood sings to me, begs for me to take you how I want, how I have always wanted to. Do it, I urged, tilting my head to offer him my neck.
Bit freaky.
I have no words.
He takes her nightgown off and lays her on the bed and then straddles her. She tells him to taste her and own her. He growls and then slices her neck, watching the blood trickle out. He licks it off of her shoulder and then up to the cut of her neck, and then he like sucks on it like a vampire. He uses the thimble to slice her breast and starts sucking the blood from there too. He also wears like a sharp little thimble on his finger, like a claw. He works his way down her body with the thimble, but not cutting her anymore. When he makes his way towards her center, he does make a small cut on her inner thigh and licks her there. She screams his name and closes her eyes, but he demands that she opens them and watch as he does this with her blood on his mouth.
Rabbit moved his thimble to the bud that broke me apart. He pushed the tip so slightly that it barely touched me, but it was enough to splinter my body in two. A scream ripped from my heart as I yanked on his hair and my eyes squeezed shut. Rabbit sucked and pulled at the new piercing, and I shook my head as the pleasure surged through me. Wait a second.
Yeah, he stabbed her right on the clit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pain.
Oh my god.
She finishes and they are both covered in blood. After a minute, she says it's her turn and she grabs her knife and holds it between them. She says tick tock and then lets it slowly travel up his body, only scraping against the skin. She brings it to the pulse at his neck and very carefully nicks him. She also drinks from his neck like a vampire and then starts jerking him off until he finishes.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
He gets off the bed to grab a vial from his bag. He uses it to scoop up her blood and puts the stopper in it. She ties it around his neck, and then he does the same for a vial for her. So now they're both wearing each other's blood, like
Angelina and Billy Bob.
Oh, I was thinking Megan and MJ.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't his blood, like, in her ring? Or no, she did wear it on a necklace, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He had her wedding ring to where it would, like, cut her if she took it off.
Mm-hmm. Aren't they, like, not together now?
No.
Really?
I don't think so. And if they are, they're not well.
Interesting. No, true.
He then takes her knife and slices his hand, asks for hers, and does the same. He grabs her hand with his bloody one and connects their cuts. He says it's a pact with blood, and she just signed herself over to him. And then, like any couple, they have a nice cup of tea and go to bed.
Oh, beautiful.
Only Earl Grey will do.
They arrive in El Paso, and Rabbit is consumed by rage thinking about the twins and what they did to inflict their scars on Dolly. So two of the uncles are twins.
Okay.
Yeah. Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
They get to their destination, and it's a hacienda at the end of town, completely secluded, perfect for murdering. They see the driveway lined with limousines and a bunch of 17 to 18-year-old kids walking around outside, and there's a sign out front that says senior prom, and Dolly asks what's going on. Either she can't read, or she doesn't know what a senior prom is, or both.
I think both.
Rabbit explains the concept of a prom to her, and she says that sounds like so much fun to dress up and dance. Two girls look inside the car at Dolly, who is wearing her thigh-length dress with a clock painted around her eye, and they start laughing at her.
Bitches. My lip curled, as if hearing the growl that rumbled under my breath, they snapped their eyes my way. I casually lifted the throat-slitting thimble on my finger and motioned across my neck. By the paling of their faces, I knew they had gotten the message to shut their fucking slut mouths. If not, I'd slit their fucking slut throats right here, right now. No one slighted my Dolly. Oh my god, these children, they're just... And he's like, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
And he would.
Oh, he would.
Slut mouth.
Dolly has no idea they're laughing at her and just tells the girls how pretty they look. Rabbit glares at the girls and they get scared, so they thank Dolly and run away. Dolly is now excited that the pretty princesses spoke to her. They keep driving down the driveway past the party and to where the twins are staying, and it's quiet here. They walk into the twins having some sort of pervert party with six other guests, and Dolly's like, a tea party, how fun. And everyone turns to stare at her. She helps herself to a chair and sits right down at the table, and one of the twins asks who the fuck she is. She pulls out a gun and slowly aims it at each person at the table and tells them to get Rabbit a chair. So she's being scary as fuck.
Yeah.
And she's dressed like a doll with a clock painted around her eye, and she's just pointing a gun at each person around the table.
She's like, get a fucking chair.
Yeah. A nightmare.
Rude manners.
Yeah. A woman runs and grabs one, and Rabbit sits down using his thimble to poke his finger and smear blood around his lips. Dolly tells him that she really doesn't like such rude people. Neither does Ellis. It makes Ellis very angry. She turns to the twins and says they traveled a long way to be here tonight, and they're treating her with quite a lot of disrespect. And they recognize her, and their faces immediately pale. One of the men at the table whispers something to a woman at his side, and Dolly flips out, grabbing her knife and stabbing him through the skull, screaming that she hates bad manners.
Oh my god.
She's losing it.
Then she sits down, and she says, okay, I am calm now.
She knows herself.
I love this version of her.
I do too.
She's insane.
Yeah.
And I love it. A woman tries to run, but Dolly just shoots her in the back, and she falls down dead. Dolly grabs the knife from the man's skull, which causes blood to ooze all over her dress.
There we go. She looked at her knife. Ugh, she said, grimacing at the blood and brain residue clinging to the filigree steel. Shrugging, she looked around for something to wipe it on, before turning to the prostitute to her right. Excuse me, Dolly said politely, and wiped the blood on the silk scarf around the whore's neck. Dolly cast her a grateful smile. Thank you so much, lovely lady.
The woman's probably like, oh my god.
They're all pedophiles though, so fuck them.
Good. Good, good, good.
Ellis begins talking to Dolly in her mind, and she turns to the twins and says, those are the men who did those things to you. They're even more terrified now, and Dolly just starts dishing up cakes and tarts for herself from the table, telling Rabbit that it's just like an unbirthday party. She pours herself and Rabbit some tea, and she tells everyone they'd all better have their pinkies up. She doesn't want to see them without their pinkies up.
Yeah.
Bad manners.
Everyone sticks out their pinkies in the air. Like, they're not even drinking. They're just like, fuck. And they stick their pinkies up.
They're like, yeah, you got it.
And when Dolly takes her first drink of the tea, she spits it out and throws her cup and stands up, grabbing her gun, and shoots another woman in the head and screams, this is Darjeeling. I only fucking drink Earl Grey.
As if they knew she was coming and just picked the wrong tea.
She stabs another woman at the table, and one man speaks up saying that he has shares in a tea company and Darjeeling is his favorite, and Dolly is like, excuse me?
Fuck you.
She's so offended right now.
Sir, why would you say anything to a psychopath?
Yeah, why would you say that? She clearly said she likes Earl Grey. And he's like, do you want to know my favorite?
Darjeeling.
that she fucking hates Darjeeling. She's been saying it from the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She fucking hates Darjeeling. She only drinks Earl Grey.
She's gonna kill that man. Then she moved. In a flash, Dolly had scrambled onto the table, smashing the food and cakes and tea under her feet. She rushed for the dick 2 seats down from me and slumped to her knees. Lifting her knife in both hands, she plunged it into his chest. She plunged and plunged again and again and again. I groaned, my cock hardening to the point of agony as she sliced into his chest cavity until his ribs began to show. The dick's body slumped in his chair, but Dolly only stopped stabbing him when she was out of breath. Leaning forward, she took hold of his collar and brought his still open eyes to meet hers. Hissing, breathless, she spat in his face, then quietly said, "Only Earl Grey will ever do." Yeah, honestly, a woman that knows what she wants.
Period.
She does.
Rabbit jumps up, grabbing Dolly by the throat and pulls her in for a kiss and commands her to end them. Only the twins and a maid and one guest remains. She tells Rabbit to pull their chairs out and commands a terrified maid to grab her 2 sharp knives of equal size, and Rabbit is absolutely rock hard.
Yeah.
She hands each of the twins a knife and tells them to fight to the death.
Oh my god.
They try to refuse, and one of the twins tries to charge Dolly, so Rabbit lunges and slices him across the abdomen, doing the same to the other twin to keep the fight fair. They refuse to fight each other, so Dolly goes behind one twin and grabs his arm that's holding the knife and forces him to stab his brother in the shoulder. Rabbit stabs one of the twins through the heart and tells Dolly to finish the other twin by doing to him what was done to her, to slice open his gut and pull out his insides. So the twins got her pregnant as a child.
Oh my god.
And when they found out, they forced her into surgery, had the child removed, and gave her a hysterectomy.
Holy fuck. That is so fucked up.
Mm-hmm. So she slices him across the abdomen to give him the same scar that she has.
Dolly lifted his shirt and slashed her knife across his stomach. But she didn't stop. She did it again and again and again. She scarred him like he had scarred her. But he got so much more. He got so many scars that his skin was no longer visible. Tweedledum slumped in my arms and Dolly drew back, blade held in the air. She locked eyes with me. I could see the hunger in her gaze. My cock twitched, and I knew her pussy would be flooding too.
Yeah, who wouldn't get horny after that?
Yeah, who wouldn't?
I would not.
Rabbit shoots the remaining guest in the head, and Dolly insists that the maid be left alive, and she goes up to the maid and grabs her hand and just smacks the back of her hand hella hard and tells her she worked for very bad men and to make better choices.
She's like, do better.
Yeah, a queen.
They leave the house, both bloody and ready to fuck. As Rabbit is driving away, Dolly is leaning over the center console, biting his earlobe and smashing her boobies into him.
I need you to touch me, Dolly whispered into my ear. Only you, no one else. No one else can touch, just my rabbit, because my rabbit makes me feel so good. I growled low in my throat. And your Dolly is the only one who can touch you. She guided my hand closer to her pussy. I could feel the heat of it under the hem of her skirt. No bad men can hurt us anymore, because Dolly and Rabbit take their touch away with each other's hands and mouths and naughty parts. She moaned and slipped my hand into her frilly knickers. The minute my fingers felt her pussy, hot and wet, I hissed and turned my head to ravage her mouth with my own. Her frilly knickers.
I hate that.
Yeah. She's got frilly knickers. Rabbit almost pulls over, but it starts raining and Dolly throws her hands up, cleansing herself of all the blood. So the Mustang is a convertible. So it starts raining and she's like, yeah, shower in the rain.
Wash the blood away.
She has like a little Hillary Duff moment, like a little coming clean.
What is it?
Oh, yeah.
Let the rain liberating. Fall.
So as this is happening and they're driving and she's like washing herself away in the rain, they hear police sirens behind them and they realize the maid called the cops.
That bitch.
Honestly.
She was given a second chance and she just honestly ruined everything.
Dolly is just stoked at the excitement and is bouncing up and down in her seat. So she doesn't care that the cops are coming. She's like, oh my god, this is so fun.
She's like, this is crazy.
She doesn't understand that they will literally never see each other again if they're caught.
She's never experienced anything.
No. They speed off down the road and pull into the nearest parking lot that they can and kill the engine. And they realize they're at a strip club. He hands the bouncer a wad of $100 bills and says, a private room. No IDs, and if the cops come, you haven't seen us. They walk through the strip club, and Dolly is transfixed by watching the woman dance. One of the dancers comes up to Rabbit and puts her hand on his shoulder, asking if he wants to dance, and he grabs her by the throat and tells her not to fucking touch him. They get to the private room, and it even has a stage with a pole in the middle with a back exit for a quick escape. So Rabbit is thinking to himself, like, oh, they probably do this all the time. Like, let people in, give them a private room, they get to escape.
I leaned against the back of the couch. Then I looked up to see Dolly watching me from beside the stage. Her hair was wet, her eyes were wide, pupils dilated. I knew she'd be wet too. I knew she'd like seeing me slam that whore up against that wall for touching what was hers. Her pussy leaked at the fact that it was only her touch I could ever stand. Ew, don't use the word leaked. It sounds like she has an issue down there.
Yeah, she should see a doctor.
She said, oops, I pissed. Rabbit commands her to dance for him like the whores out there. She does as she's told and starts dancing seductively and kneels down, spreading her thighs before pulling her panties to the side to show him her pussy, and immediately smiles and covers herself back up. She strips down to just her panties and socks and crawls toward the edge of the stage toward Rabbit. She begins touching herself and extends her neck to him, and he slices her with his thimble. She removes her hand from her undies and rubs her juices on the cut.
Oh, God. Yeah. Taste. Dolly's voice sailed into my ear, dragging me from my thoughts. I stared at my girl, braced on the edge of the stage, her pussy's wetness and throat's blood waiting on her neck, offered like a feast for me to take. My lips parted in need. Goodness gracious.
He does as he's told, but chomps down on her neck and she moans, pushing him away. They struggle for power and she finally pulls her panties off, throwing them to him as he throws a wad of money at her. He pulls his dick out and she straddles him, giving him a lap dance but never actually touching him. He throws her down on the couch and she tells him to get off of her and throws him a sly smile so he knows that this is just some role play for her.
Whoa.
She struggles as he thrusts into her.
Sweat ran over our slick skin as I pounded into her. Her pussy clenched tighter and tighter in time with the choke sounds of her impending orgasm. Submit, I ordered, and increased my speed. Dolly struggled harder, one final attempt to fight me off. My balls tightened as she did, giving me the resistance I craved so fucking badly. Submit, I bellowed with the final thrust.
Submit!
You got into it. I did. Dolly's scream joined the music vibrating in the air. She arched into my chest before her body went limp under my touch. Seeing her flop to the couch, wrists weak and throat vulnerable to my hand, heat swept through me and I came. I gritted my teeth together as a feeling I'd never felt before, a release so strong that I snarled and growled, took me over, incinerating me from the inside. I thrust and thrust until Dolly's tight pussy ceased gripping my cock. Her legs collapsed to the side, her body completely spent.
She smiles at him and he moves to get up, but she says, no, you stay in there. They stay like that for a while and Dolly tells him about a movie she watched last night where people had sex gently and said that they loved each other and tells him how weird that is. And now Rabbit is sad for her. They get dressed and leave out the back door. As they drive off, Dolly falls asleep and Rabbit decides he wants to tell her that he loves her after the final kill and he wants to show her lovemaking.
Aww.
We're back in Eddie's POV. He's interviewing the maid on the two people who walked in and killed the pedo ring. Sick fucks was written on the wall in pink lipstick. His uncle tells him that he got a lead from a young man who came forward saying he was abused at the Earnshaw estate, but the case got buried when it was first reported, and it might be worth looking into. As the maid described the outfits of the attackers, he knows it's Ellis and Heathen. He assumed Heathen took Ellis and forced her to watch him kill, but the maid is like, no, the girl did almost all of it.
She's like, she's psychotic.
Yeah. She's like, she scared me.
She says they're both evil, and the girl laughed as she murdered everyone. But Eddie is like, no, Ellis was pure and Heathen was manipulating her. And he decides to track down Heathen's mother and question her and figures that Ellis's dad and Uncle John are next on the hit list. They meet with Mrs. Lockwood, Heathen's mother, who says that Heathen always had violent tendencies as a child and she was terrified of him by the time he was 9. When he was 6, there was a break-in and his grandfather was murdered in front of him in their home, and he then kept the pocket watch that was broken in the attack.
Aww.
After that, he became obsessed with death and serial killers, and then he started killing insects. Then she walked in one day to him cutting himself and rubbing his blood all over his body, chanting tick-tock, tick-tock. She tells Eddie that Heathen is beyond help and is dangerous. He gets back to the station and reads through the buried abuse report and just says to himself, Jesus Christ.
Because he saw on the report that Heathen was getting abused too.
So now it's all clicking. Rabbit and Dolly are now on their way to the Jabberwock, the man who hurt Ellis the most. She tells Rabbit how scared she is of this man, but he tells her that she can defeat him and he won't let her get hurt. They pull up to Uncle John's beach house in Del Rio, and Rabbit pulls her in for a deep kiss, gentle and soft. Dolly lets herself think about what the Jabberwock did to her and gets angry, jumping out of the car and toward the house. She bursts in the door, slashing everyone who gets in her way, and then she hears the Jabberwock yelling, "Ellis! Ellis!" She chases him through the house and into a dark room where she falls through a hole in the floor. Now she's in a dark room with just a bed. The door to the room opens and the Jabberwock walks in. He goes to her and starts rubbing his hands on her, saying, "My Ellis." She recognizes him as Uncle John and not the Jabberwock, so now she's Ellis.
Ah!
She falls onto the bed and all the memories flood back as he climbs on top of her. Rabbit is running with his AK-47 through the house, freaking out, trying to find Dolly. He shoots every guard that comes at him and follows the sound of Dolly's screams. He finds the hole she fell through and sees her laying catatonic on the bed. He finds the staircase and bursts through the door, and the Jabberwock jumps off the bed and is like, "Heathen, I never thought I'd see you again," and Heathen shoots him in the leg. As he reaches for his own gun, he shoots the Jabberwock in the wrist. Dolly is staring at the ceiling, and Heathen tells Uncle John he seemed much more scary when he was a child. He grabs Dolly's knife and sees her dress bunched up to her waist, and he's seeing red, reminding himself that this is her kill. He kicks Uncle John onto his back and uses both Dolly's knife and his own to pin him to the floor through his shoulders.
Oh my god.
Out. But deserved.
Yeah, deserved. He sees a door in the room and kicks it down, and it's a bathroom. This part was so strange to me, but this man knows what he's doing, I guess. It's a bathroom, and he fills the tub and grabs a lifeless Dolly and sets her in it. And then he holds her under the water until she starts fighting and then eventually passes out. Then he pulls her out and brings her back to consciousness, and she says, "Rabbit," so she's Dolly again.
Oh.
So he just killed her a little bit.
I think it was like maybe he made her see like a tunnel vision, so she was going down another rabbit hole.
Maybe.
Oh.
Stinking on the fly, though. We love that. She grabs her knife and goes back to the Jabberwock and just starts stabbing the shit out of him and writes "sick fucks" on the wall in his blood. She tells Rabbit she's tired and she wants to leave. She falls asleep in the car, and he eventually wakes her up with a surprise. It's a brand new dress, longer and more beautiful than the previous one. He turns on her boombox and they start to dance under the stars in the middle of nowhere, and he tells her this is her prom, and he puts a crown on her head, and he says he wants to try and make love gently. They're both nervous because it's not what they're used to, but they undress each other and he slides into her.
If he wanted to, he would, ladies.
It's true.
Sweat broke out on my body as I took her in the balmy night. Dolly's breathing grew labored and I felt her pussy begin to clench. I groaned against her mouth, my tongue sliding against hers. I swallowed Dolly's moans and she swallowed mine as we built to a high. My hands hooked under her shoulders as pressure built at the base of my spine. My thighs grew tight. My chest was flush against Dolly's. My lips fused to hers. "Rabbit," she whispered against my mouth. I felt her pussy contract, and Dolly's mouth broke from mine and her head tipped back. She cried out in pleasure, the sound and feel of being inside her carrying me with her. I groaned, eyes closed, as I came inside her. Our bodies were slick with sweat, arms wrapped around each other.
Sweet.
Yeah.
They made love.
He tells her he loves her, and she says, "I love you too, Heathen." And she's never called him Heathen as Dolly. She tells him they only have one more left, the King of Hearts, and she asks what comes next for Ellis when it's over, and he says he doesn't know. He thinks a tea party with Earl Grey. They get to Laredo to kill the King of Hearts, and Rabbit puts Dolly's crown on. As they pull up to the house, Rabbit tells her that it's going to be dangerous in there, and he doesn't know how this is going to end. He definitely will be expecting them since they're all over the news. But Dolly says he has to die, even if it results in both of their deaths. They exchange I love yous and walk in the front door where Ellis's dad is sitting, waiting for them at a desk. He's thinner and more gaunt and using an oxygen tank. He has end-stage lung cancer, and he doesn't have to live.
Yep. Karma.
He tells them he's been expecting them and tells Ellis how beautiful she looks and tells them to sit. He says he wants to tell them why he did what he did. And I got a glimpse of, like, maybe there would be no redemption, but, like, an apology, but
no.
Fuck this guy.
Yeah. Ooh.
He says he did it because he wanted to, because he loves it, the power. He tells Heathen his dad sold him to the estate for a few $1,000s and then had his death faked. He tells Ellis that he killed her mother for finding out about his preferences. He spiked her tea with arsenic. Then he tries to tell Heathen that they aren't so different, and Heathen raises his gun, but there's a bullet hole in Mr. Earnshaw's head before he can even pull the trigger.
Good.
And Dolly just says, this man was awfully rude. No manners.
No manners.
Dad. She tells Rabbit that Ellis is gone for good. She's gone to a better place now. She's free. She leaves her signature sick fucks and pink lipstick on a portrait of herself when they see police lights flashing outside. They run through the house as the cops run inside and run straight into Eddie. Rabbit introduces him to Dolly as the Mad Hatter and says, what are you gonna do next? Eddie says, yes, I am the Mad Hatter. And he says he knows everything that went on when they were kids and has a newfound respect for Heathen and lots of pity for Ellis. He tells them to run. That rabbit is going to lead her down a new rabbit hole, and maybe one day they can have tea and he'll bring the Earl Grey. Eddie covers up for them while they escape out a secret tunnel and tells his cop friends that he hasn't found anyone, but they must be close. Now we're in the epilogue. They get to Mexico and they live in a house on the beach. So they escaped.
Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's showing off her new bikini to Rabbit and he loves it. Dolly exclaims it's time for tea and pours them 2 cups of Earl Grey. Just as she's telling him how much she misses killing, they hear a loud smack from the public beach and see some creep assaulting a young boy. Rabbit tells her to go put on one of her pretty dresses and pulls out his watch saying, tick tock. The end.
Oh, so they're just like little pedo killers now.
Yep, they're vigilantes.
Fuck yeah.
So Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one? Speechless.
I didn't hate it.
No, it was good. It was just the subject matter I could have done without.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll give it 3.
Okay. And 3. Riley?
No.
Would you trade places with Dolly?
No.
Absolutely not.
Not at all. Not one little bit.
No, not even for 5 minutes.
Mm-mm.
Is Heathen sexy?
Like at the end of the book, yeah.
Yeah.
In a way, you know?
Yeah.
It's fair.
He's like taking back what was taken from him. These are hard questions to answer this book.
They are.
It's a really messed up book. I love psycho books.
Yeah.
Ones that really fuck with you.
Yeah.
The beginning was a rough.
It was.
Yeah.
A rough read. Yeah.
And I didn't even read it.
You didn't even get all the nitty gritty stuff.
No.
No. We censored a lot of it.
I literally cried. Like that, like it really like broke my fucking heart. But they came out strong. They came out strong together.
And they did. Like, and I loved the vigilante.
Yeah.
I'm glad everyone got what they deserved.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we're telling Riley all about Does It Hurt by H.D. Carlton, who wrote Haunting Adeline. So
I know. I'm excited.
We're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
So we have like a girl on the cover with a lighthouse. Looks like it's the ocean. And it says, the beacon of light was supposed to save me. I feel like she's going to live on a beach and she's going to have, you know, traumatic upbringing. She's gonna be on the beach. That's where she lives now to make herself feel better. And then she meets, I feel like, because it's H.D. Carlton, is this a dark romance?
Yeah, it's dark.
Yeah. I would say yeah.
There's going to be a bad boy, and he's going to come on the beach.
Oh, he's coming on a beach, all right.
Blow, blow, blow. And there's something happening in the water in the lighthouse. They're going to have to be in the lighthouse. I think they're going to fuck in a lighthouse.
Okay.
That's what you guys get.
I will say, you don't 100% have it, but nothing that you said was untrue.
Pow, yeah. Pow, pow.
On a roll. You're getting good. Too good.
I am getting good. I'm not looking these up. I swear.
Okay.
I promise.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane. Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.